The following is a recording of a discussion group at Ordinary Mind Zendo. The texts we take up for study in these groups range from koan collections to poetry to psychoanalytic papers. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating. Ordinary Mind Zendo is a nonprofit organization that depends on the generosity of people like you.
So I believe we're at the 47th Patriarch. Somebody like to read?
I'll read. Wukong studied with Zen Master Dansha. Dansha asked him, "What is the self that is before the eon of emptiness?" As Wukong was about to reply, Dansha said, "You're still noisy. Go away for a while." Then one day, when Wukong climbed up to the mountain peak, he was greatly enlightened.
All right. What are we going to understand about the question that's being asked? What is the self prior to the empty eon, is the way this is translated here. And capital S self. And so both of those words are problematic. What does capital S self mean? And what the devil's the empty eon? And what do they have to do with each other? I think that as we read this, considered in relation to or transposing it into the question, what is your original face before the birth of your parents? Is that the same question or a different question? And does it require the same answer or a different answer? There's something about capital S self and original face that I think go together, and the empty eon has a certain parallel with the notion of before the birth of your parents, right? So let's see if we hold that parallel in mind as we read the story and see if it makes any of it clearer.
But this translation itself is not capitalized.
No.
Oh, all right.
Was yours pretty similar otherwise?
I think, you know, the throwing around capital letters is not always helpful. But all right, let's just proceed and read some more of this and see what we think it was talking about. I'll read some of the background.
Wukong lectured on the Lotus Scripture when he was only 18 years old. After being ordained as a Buddhist monk, he went to Western China and studied the scriptures and treatises, comprehending their great meaning. Then he left Western China and went to study with Zen Master Dongjia. After his sudden realization, Wukong came back from the mountain peak and stood by Dongjia. Dongjia slapped him and said, "I thought you knew it exists." Wukong joyfully paid his respects. The next day, Dongjia went up to lecture in the hall and said,
There's just a little bit of difference in the translation here, and so it's says, what he, the teacher asks him, as in the question, what is the self prior to the empty eon? And then later, when he was awakened, he returned at once from the mountaintop and stood before Tan Shan, Dong Shan. This is his presentation now of the answer. And Tan Shan slapped him and said, I think you know it exists. And then the master joyfully bowed. So that is the picture of his presentation of an answer, the response and acknowledgement, right? You also, or I do get a hint of the original face in the fact that he slaps him, right? He's he presents, says, what's the, what is your, this prior self? What's your original self? And he answers, he comes back, and just stands there, right? Gets slapped, yep, there it is, right? not hidden at all, right?
I wonder if it's something else too, though. Like, so the other koan this reminds me of is, I can't remember it, but it's the one where it's like, where does everything come from? It's like, if, you know, there's this original purity, where do mountains, rivers, and the great earth come from?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like this is that, but in terms of the human being, like, where does...
Well, this is sort of saying, where does the self come from, rather than where mountains and rivers come from? Where does the world come from?
Like, yeah.
Can I say something about the demonstration with this story?
Yeah.
which I liked about it, actually, is he goes up on the mountain and finds his stone. Awareness, enlightenment, whatever it is. Rather than, it seems like in all these other stories, this results when the teacher, whoever it is, says something to him, does something, you know. And this is quite a different story. And of course, it made me think about Buddha's last teachings. Did he say, go out and find somebody to say something to you, or slap you, or do this, or do that? Or did he say, as it be a light unto yourself, seek out your own salvation? Which seems that this story is more in line with that than the other ones have been.
Well, there are often stories of somebody who doesn't get an answer and has to go off by themselves until something happens. Yeah. You know,
but most of these stories don't seem to be
that way. They seem to be
way.
Much more awakened in as part of the dialogue.
Mm.
Right, I think that's true. This one is... here you get a sense too, going up to the top of the peak can mean a lot of things, but it also can be he looks out, views the whole world, and it's like the morning star, it's all himself. Well, let's keep reading here. So Tan Shan was inspired to write a poem after this. We can read that. Julie, you can read that. Sure.
The sun illumines the solitary peak, green. The moon faces the valley stream, cold. The wondrous secret of the enlightened ones should not be placed in a little heart. Then he got down from the high seat. Wukong came directly forward and said, your lecture today can't fool me anymore. Dan Jia said, try to quote my lecture. Wukong was silent. Dan Jia said, I thought you'd gotten a glimpse. Wukong then went out.
Yeah, so I think you got a glimpse of that realm. I mean, here it's acknowledgement. It's he says, your talk can't fool me anymore, because what I've got is silence. I'm not going to be fooled by words. And how do you present the meaning of what I said? And he stands silently. Again, this is standing. This is what he did when he came back from the mountain. He stood silently in front of him, right?
There are other stories where the monk stands silently and the teacher says, no, don't do that, don't pull that old thing. Or,
yeah, that's right. Or Katagiri is, you got to say something, so that there's silence, and there's silence, and I suppose the issue is how a teacher and student understand where the person is coming from previously, and what the silence means in the context of their previous dilemma. Here, what you get is the background story is he, as a youth, he lectured on the Lotus Sutra, and he studied all the text and everything, right? So that he's presented as having come from words, right, and concepts, and having mastered all that. When the master first asks the question, he starts to talk, presumably from this background of old understanding, so that for him, coming from that place, silence is a result of a different perspective, a different kind of understanding. A lot of the times, silence will be criticized as an attachment to emptiness. Here, what you have a little more is he's not just being silent, but he's standing there in silence. He's basically being like the mountain. Right, he's presenting embodied silence. It's not just the absence of talking.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that many of the responses to koans, wabe, the response would be silent. That is no speech. That they are enacted. So they are, as you said, embodied,
mm-hmm.
but often in quite dramatic ways.
Yes.
They can be in very still ways or very dramatic ways, but not a word spoken. And it seems to me to get to the point here that the understanding is sensory rather than intellectual.
Yeah, there's always some version of presenting understanding as other than intellectual, right? And
you could also see it as a I hadn't thought about the him lecturing since he was 18, but it's almost like letting go of control, and like the silence is more about trust in his own experience rather than like needing a verse or something to tell him what to do or feel or think about the world.
Well, there's certainly that trust in your own experience. I think it's this complete standing your ground, and one version of that is seeing your face as the original face, of not creating a separation between who you are in this moment and some abstract, transcendental essence that you've projected out into the world and are now trying to somehow reach or get a glimpse of, right? So that See, I think that when he stands there in silence and the master slaps him, it's sort of a call and response about immediacy and presence, right? Nowadays, you know, a high five might be they do it, you know, mutually rather than one just slapping the other. But there is that kind of meeting in the moment, right? All right, let's move ahead to Keizan's Teisho. Somebody else want to read a little bit? Here it starts, from the time his mother held him wrapped in baby clothes. He was not one of the herd, but rather stood out. It's sort of an odd expression in this context. You know, you picture herds of babies.
Yeah, I don't see that.
I can't really find that.
It comes into.
All right, I'll read from this one. I don't know why they've done it. When he made up his mind to practice Zen, he made a concentrated effort. Therefore, when he was asked about the self prior to the empty eon, he tried to give an answer. Tansha did not approve, but sent him away for a while. One day he climbed to the top of Poyu Creek. He saw the 10 directions unobstructed and the 4 cardinal points gateless. When the 10 directions appeared right in front of him, he was awakened. So that everything is simply present to him. This is like the great way lies beneath our feet, extending freely in every direction. This is the realization that the world you're in is the answer, right? It's not something that you're simply trying to pass through on the way to something else, right? But the experience of this.
That first sentence also highlights the way in which he got it wrong. So here it's, Wukong was truly extraordinary, yet when he set his mind to Zen, he worked especially hard.
Yeah, so that in itself is sort of it's his virtue and his problem, right? There's a way in which if you work especially hard, you're less able to see the gateless gate, to see that the gate is open everywhere, right? You're inclined to see an obstacle that needs to be overcome. All right. He returned and stood before Tansha without saying a word. And Shao realized he knew it existed and said, "I think you know it exists." Then he joyfully bowed and missed the slap in this version. Tan Shao finally entered the hall the next day and acknowledged the awakening. Later, when he appeared as a teacher, the master said, "When I was slapped by my former teacher, my cleverness disappeared, and when I tried to open my mouth, I couldn't. Is there anyone here who has not completely experienced such joy? If you are lucky and do not have a bit in your mouth or saddle on your backs, you must apply yourself to the means of awakening.
Very different translation.
Yeah, totally.
Want to read the...
First of all, the difference between I think you know it exists,
yeah,
and I thought you knew it exists, which is what this says,
uh-huh,
seems somewhat significant because...
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
It makes him... it challenges his standing in front of him and turns it more into... he doesn't accept the stand and slaps him, and then he's awakened with the slap as a separate stage. So it's... yeah, so you could slice this in two different directions then, right?
Actually, ours does a better job of the horse stuff, I think. He says, if you would avoid biting a bit and carrying a burden, each of you would settle yourself.
Right.
Each of you settle yourself.
Each of you settle yourself.
But the image of, you know, we do this to ourselves.
Yeah, we create a problem for ourselves.
Is that the bit and the burden?
The bit and the saddle. Yeah. We burden ourselves unnecessarily. So this says, when patriarchal teachers see eye to eye, they walk in this realm prior to the empty eon and immediately illuminate the scenery of the fundamental realm. If you can't see this yet, then even if you sit in Zazen speechless for 1,000 or 10,000 years, immobile as a withered tree, like dead ashes, what's the use? However, when people hear of prior to the empty eon, they mistakenly think there is no self, no other, no before or after, no origination or extinction, no beings or Buddhas, so forth and so on. So this is, here's the dilemma of, you can't go from just conceptual knowledge to speechlessness or to emptiness, right? Then you become attached to blankness, right? And this is the fundamental temptation that I think everybody has when they sit, is to assume that they're aiming for a mind that will be completely clear of all thought, right? That some ideal state to achieve is one in which you sit in blissful silence without a thought in your head, right?
Well, that's the bit and the burden that we come with.
Yes, this unfortunately is its own problem. And Kazan denounces that state as, you know, being a withered tree or dead ashes. Now,
after I read this, I read an article in the New Yorker about Eva Boskowitz and charter schools and how the kids must be silent in the hallways, they must be silent in the classroom unless they're spoken to, they have to sit in their own little square and not move. It's very strange.
Well, it's very disciplined, and it's probably just more very Japanese, you know. it's the militarization of school, and there's some kids who will benefit from that kind of discipline, and there's some kids that'll just be forever square pegs and round holes then, right? Now, Joko, I remember when she was writing her second book, putting it together, Nothing Special, she sent around to people asking them about possible titles. And what another title she suggested that to be voted on was Flowers on a Withered Tree. So there is a strong sense that you have to pass through the stage of the withered tree before you come forth, right? So there's that sense of the withered tree being a image of the death of the self, let's say, right? A picture of extinction. Now, the dilemma is usually whether you take that kind of extinction very literally and try to stamp out all aspects of yourself and then stay in some version of blankness. But there's a way in which part of what you could say happens in a sesshin is that you become totally exhausted to the point of being utterly stupid, right? That you have not a thought in your head or an idea of what you're about, you forget what day it is, you don't know how long you've been sitting there, whether it's morning or night, and it's just the bell rings, you sit down and they hit the bell rings, you get up and they hit the gong, you sit down and you'll know anything, right? You just are in a kind of mindless stupor. And in that state, something is liable to happen that will suddenly bring you alive, right? And say, oh, right? Then you get slapped awake into a different sense of being present to things, right? And that kind of thing happens, right? That's one model for what can happen in a session.
Is it something that happens internally or externally that brings you?
It could be either one. I mean, often it's external, but sometimes it could just be suddenly a thought or a sound or something happens that, it sort of snaps you out of it, but snaps you back into something that has, it means that you feel suddenly awake again, but without all the preoccupations of how am I doing and right and wrong and anything else. You just, right, everything's fine. That's sort of like the idea of the morning star experience. You're just sitting there extinguishing everything until something lightens you up. But in any case, I think that whenever you hear in these stories somebody denouncing a state of people becoming like a withered tree, they denounce it because it must be very prevalent, right? You don't pass a law against things that people don't do. You warn people against stuff that you know they're doing. So the craving for emptiness and self-elimination is very strong. There is a ditch that it's easy to fall into. So Kazan goes on about that problem.
It's also brilliant because, that is the Heart Sutra that he quotes. So it's like people mistakenly think that is not a lie.
Well, it's if he's saying people really mistake what that's saying. Mm-hmm. They really, in a sense, they take it literally.
But it's like it's so.
They think that if a single thought arises, one turns one's back on it. And they are like corpses harboring ghosts as dead as withered trees. Okay, now, or this is another problem. This is. perhaps one you see less, or else they think that anything they do is all right. They may think that you can speak of mountains, rivers, self, other, or they think you can say it is a mountain, but it's not a mountain. You can call it a river, but it's not a river. What is the use of saying such things? They all end up on the wrong path. They either become attached to form or else they fall into the views of the nihilists. Either you're attached to form or attached to emptiness. Thinking anything you do is all right is sort of what gets denounced as Guji Zen, if this is it, why practice mentality, or a kind of false confidence in sort of, this is really sort of like just sounding Zen, I suppose.
I think it's also a trap that teachers fall into more than students. Mm-hmm. Right.
How so?
You know, like seeing that there's some aspect of a game to it, you know, is anything I do a teaching, a practice?
Well, I think that's right. I think that it's certainly a teacher's dilemma to not sort of see anything they do is naturally manifesting the way, so they don't have to remember all those
precepts
and things like that. Yeah, I think that's true.
I mean, like when students act like that, like we have a teacher to smack us.
Yes, but nobody smacks a teacher, right? That's why they need peers.
Yeah. Right? Shugen and Ryushin used to get on each other's Dokusan lines for Mondos to needle each other about that stuff.
All right, let's move on here. Let's see. Do not look within. Do not look outside. Do not try to quiet thought. Do not try to calm your bodies. Just know intimately and understand intimately. See, I think that's very important because it's this sense of, it's not content or the absence of content. It's whether you experience whatever the content is as empty or as it or as this. You know, the way you look out on the landscape, it's just what it is, right? With that kind of settled assurance, regardless of what's showing up in the mirror. So this realm is not something that can be said to be before or after. What you can say is it's present. It's neither before or after. It's just the immediacy of the moment, whatever its content. This is a description of immediacy, like the immediacy of being slapped. If you think that the version of this is he stands there and he's a little bit too like a dead tree, the slap brings him back to immediacy. And that's sort of a common enough Rinzai trope that you get. It's not that you've silenced the mind, it's that you're completely present in the moment, whatever that is. Right? All right, I think that's about all I have to say about this. Anything else you want to add?
I'm surprised at how overlooked passages like this are. Like when he says, don't look inside, don't look outside, don't try to quiet your thoughts or rest your body. Mm-hmm. You know, like that seems something like to put over the Zendo door.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
But like it doesn't like jive with a lot of Zendo's approach to practice.
Yeah, yeah. He says, cut off discrimination at once and try to do Zazen a little. That is your translation.
Where is this?
I have just know intimately, understand intimately, cut off all at once, sit for a while and see.
Sit for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there is that, you see, that sense is, if it's immediately present, it's not revealed as a function of how long you've been sitting or how hard you've been sitting. It's much more a quality of, are you just sitting and seeing clearly in this particular moment? And that moment doesn't have to be preceded by 7 days of sitting without sleep, right?
Yeah, if it's immediately present, what are we striving for?
Right, what are we striving for? See, whatever it is we're striving for is this big add-on, right?
And it keeps us thinking that it's not immediately present.
It's not here, right, right.
But what if what we're striving for is to be immediately present?
Well, it's this peculiar thing that we think we're, you know, that's, they say, riding an ox looking for an ox. Mm-hmm. You know, you're riding all over, saying, where the hell's the ox? Where's the ox?
When you meet the Buddha, come to Buddha.
Right, but no, but it's really the whole notion of trying to be immediately present is like, trying to speak prose. Right, or it's like you think you've got to do something else other than what you're already doing.
Yeah, what could you do? What
right now
to be more present than
what you are? How could you get water any wetter? Right?
I try to not use words like awareness in beginning instruction.
Yeah,
because it can become this sort of like supernatural awareness.
Yes, as if it's something other than what they're.
How they got here?
Yeah,
crossing the street.
That's right. Yeah. Right, just we try to tell people, sit and feel your body breathe. Right, that's not cultivating any special kind of awareness. Just feel what's already happening. Just stay present to that. Right?
Easier said than done.
It's so hard.
Exactly.
It's easier done than said.
Yeah,
Yeah.
All right. On that.
Right.